Hi, my name is Ben Armstrong.
Hi, this is David Koch.
My name is Thomas Maurer.
Hi, I'm Donna Sarkar.
Hi, my name is Lana Montgomery.
Hi, I'm Seth Warres.
Hi, I'm Aaron Thomas.
I'm Jess Dodson.
Hi, I'm Rocky Heckman.
Hi, I'm Sonia Cuff.
Hi, I'm Troy Hunt.
Hello, this is Wally Mead.
My name is Reid Purvis.
Hi, I'm Lars Finn.
Hi, my name is Alan Birchall.
Hi, I'm Adam Fowler.
Hi, I'm Sky Guthrie, and you're listening to the Need to Know podcast.
One of the best MVPs and one ex-MVP. Mark and Rob together offer over 40 years Microsoft experience. Robert Crane. He's an Office Servers and Services MVP, the Director of CIA Ops for over 20 years, and a very sought-after presenter. Visit CIAOps.com. Mark Keane. He's an Azure TSP working at Microsoft, building constructive tension, the productive force that makes customers want to use Microsoft Azure. All the latest Microsoft Cloud news, as well as industry guest deep dive conversations. It's the Need to Know podcast, all thanks to Rode Microphones. And brought to you by Ingram Micro Cloud. Streamline the provisioning, billing, and management of your clients' popular cloud business applications, including Microsoft Azure, Office 365, Skykick, and more with the Ingram Micro Cloud Marketplace and Cloud Store. Get started now with Azure with the Ingram Micro Easy Azure program at www.ingrammicrocloud.com.au/Microsoft-Azure. The Need to Know podcast. Catch us on Twitter and Facebook, NGK Podcast, and online at podcasts.needtoknow.cloud.
Welcome along to another Need to Know podcast. My name is Robert Crane, and joining me as always as we get towards the festive season is Mark Keane. Welcome, Mark.
Hey, Rob, how are you?
Not too bad. What's happening in Mark's world?
Oh, well, it's lead up to Christmas, so it's lead up to all the planning for not only people moving to the cloud and consuming lots of Azure, it's also planning for the Christmas festive season, trips, holidays, people going away.
Have you been naughty or nice this year?
Well, apparently I've been a bit of both. From what I am feeling from our recent set of podcasts, are you leading towards, is this your segue into the best of?
Yes, I think that what we've decided to do, since we are becoming more and more popular and we do like to hear from our listeners, that what I've done is I've gone out and created a link. So I'll give you that link now and we'll refer to it a couple of times. It's bit.ly/n2kfeedback. So bit.ly/n2kfeedback. Basically, it's a form online that you can go and you can enter some information, so you can give us some direct feedback. But what we're looking for is we're looking for our listeners basically to let us know a couple of things. Firstly, what they liked about the show, some good bits this year, some good episodes, some conversations, some deep dive information they got benefit out of. And I think also we'd ask them to let us know what they'd like to see us do in the future. What topics, what sort of discussions would they like us to have here on the Need to Know podcast? I think that's what we want, don't we, Mark?
Yeah, I think so. So we're going to splice them all together in one episode. And so it'll go bang, 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 all the best bits all mashed up in one bit. It's a bit like the radio stations when they go away for the Christmas break and they put the best bits together. Same sort of thing.
So how unoriginal are we to come up with this groundbreaking idea? So we thought we'd give it a try. So again, we'll throw it out to the listeners to crowdsource the best of the Need to Know podcast. So again, that link is bit.ly/n2kfeedback. And again, it doesn't have to be necessarily about the best episode or the funniest comment or whatever. It can also be about what you'd like to see coming going forward with the Need to Know podcast. What would you like us to deep dive on, spend more time on, focus on? Because again, we'd like to be driven by the users, the listeners out there. So I think that is probably going to garner an avalanche, don't you think, Mark? We're going to get an avalanche of people filling in that form.
I think it's going to be difficult not to fill up the 45 minutes. It's going to be full on. It's going to be a lot of people sort of responding back with their ideas.
It's been an action packed year, hasn't it? This year, it's been lots of Office 365, lots of Azure, a lot of news from you and changes at your end.
And the hardest part's going to have to pick which one. So Azure versus Office 365. Which one's going to win?
Well, I think they both win. Really, I think the reality is we've done very well this year that we've managed to focus ourselves on that product. We hopefully have given information to people to help them in their job and also learn the products. Both of them are still on a pretty fast growth curve. I think Azure's obviously ahead because more and more people are adopting it and it's growing in its adoption. So I think we're on a pretty good wicket.
Oh, good wicket, of course, definitely. And what's that link again, Rob?
So the link again is bit.ly/n2kfeedback, and that will take you to a lovely Microsoft form that I created in my Office 365 tenant that will give you, just one question that you can fill out, a nice text field that you can write a story, short or long, as to, again, your thoughts, feedbacks, comments, and best of bits from 2017.
Excellent. And so, Rob, back to you. So what about yourself for Christmas?
For Christmas, it's family, typical family sort of stuff. I prefer to hang around and have a staycation at home. My ideas of holidays are going away when everybody else is at work. So it's pretty much basic stuff. The roads will be clear. The shops will be empty.
It's going to be great.
Not as many people. Sorry?
I said it's going to be great. Like, it'll be quiet. Sydney won't be Sydney. It won't be hustle and bustle. It'll be like...
it'll be a normal country town. Yeah, it's what it used to be. So it's good. I find that the people who are around, it's good to have meetings. You can get anywhere just about in 15 minutes. The train's nice and empty. So, yeah, I think it's going to be... always enjoy this time of year. It's a bit more relaxed. Hopefully the calls and the demands aren't quite as much until we get back into it, probably around the end of January. So it'd be good to take a bit of a break and have a bit of Xbox and movie time and catch up on some reading.
And yeah, exactly. Catch up on Azure and Office 365 so we can always strive to be better.
We probably need to maybe look at refreshing that because Microsoft has, I suppose, now begun to focus on Microsoft 365. So Office 365 is still out there, obviously, but we need to probably incorporate the Microsoft 365 stuff, which is going to include something from your world, so the EMS, the security, the Azure sort of stuff, plus Windows 10, which we both use. So more stuff for us to talk about, I think. So lots and lots of news with that product. That product obviously is improving in leaps and bounds and integration-wise together. So I think we'll add that to the mix, and I think that's going to keep us busy pretty much for 2018.
Alrighty, should we get into it, Rob?
Why not? Why don't you kick us off with some Azure news?
Okay, so ND and NCV2 virtual machines are now available. So the ND and NCV2 virtual machines were announced at Build 2017, now GA'd. So the ND series, powered by NVIDIA Tesla's P40 GPUs based on the new Pascal architecture, will provide more than twice the performance over the previous generation for FP32 single precision floating point operations. For AI workloads, which is artificial intelligence, utilizing CNTK, TensorFlow, CAFE, and other frameworks, the ND series will also offer much larger GPU memory size of 24 gigabytes. Rob, that's massive. Enabling you to fit much larger neural net models. Also, like the NC series, the ND series will offer RDMA and InfiniBand connectivity. The next generation of NC series, which is the NCV2, is powered by NVIDIA Tesla's P100 GPUs. These new GPUs will provide more than twice the computational performance of the current NC series. They'll also offer InfiniBand networking configurations for workloads that require fast interconnect and also accelerate scale out capability and improved single instance performance. There you go. More info of that in the show notes. There's been a lot of announcements, Rob, in relation to new hardware in Azure.
Yeah, lots and lots of stuff there, and it's good to see. And this AI stuff seems to be taking off, so lots and lots more powerful machines are being put in place. So again, think of all that extra rack space that Microsoft's going to need to add to its Azure data centers to cope with this.
Do you know what I deployed just recently?
What?
One of the new B series. Remember the ones we talked about in the podcast recently? The burstable ones?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I deployed one of those recently, and based on what SKU you have and with how much you pay, you have a different baseline for your CPU, and then you start building up credits, and it tells you how many credits you build up, and then based on the amount of credits you build up over time to a maximum number of credits, you can burst up above the baseline. So you can go up to, some of them allow you to go up to 800% of CPU performance.
Hmm. Pretty impressive.
Pretty cool. I know, right? And speaking of virtual machines, the M series virtual machines, Rob, we talked about this. Remember Corey Sanders did a video on this, how he did a nested virtualization demo on the M series with Hyper-V, and then he did a nested virtualization on top of that. So two layers of nested virtualization on the M series, and the double layer virtual machine he had running ended up being the size of a D14 or D13 or something. It was huge. Check these out. The highest performing Azure virtual machines to date. The M series are now available. These are optimized for large in-memory workloads such as SAP HANA. These new M series VMs are designed with very, very, very high RAM and CPU capabilities, supporting up to 128 virtual CPUs and between 1 and 3.8 terabytes of RAM. So note the 3.8 terabytes of RAM support for the 128 CPU configuration will be coming very, very soon. These VM instances will also support premium storage as well, well, obviously, because you'll need it for that speed. The new M series will be using the accelerated networking capabilities up to 30 gigabits per second, VM to VM data transfer. The M series VMs will be initially available in East US 2, West US 2 and the West Europe regions, spreading out to the rest of the world, 42 regions over the course of the next several months. For Azure VM availability, so Rob, we've done a lot of announcements in relation to Azure VM availabilities, and just in case you're wondering, thinking, how do I keep up with all of this? Well, there is this website that you can check it out. So it's called the Azure Products Available by Region website. There's a link I'll put in my blog in the show notes, but it's pretty cool. You can go to this website, lists all the products, their availability by every single region. Also, you can check out the Azure Compute Units as well. Rob, there's a concept of an Azure Compute Unit. So in case you're wondering, you know what? You're talking about all these CPUs and these virtual machine sizes. There's D size, M size, N size. There's a B size even now. How do we know the difference across all of those sizes if we want to compare based on CPU performance? Well, now you can. It's called the Azure Compute Unit. There's a link I'll put in my blog and in the show notes. Very, very helpful when you're pricing stuff up for customers and things.
Cool. All right. Well, let me do some Office 365 news. So some things that Microsoft has done for us is that they have introduced a Flow panel in our SharePoint lists and libraries. So Flow, you may remember, is an automation tool, a bit like if this, then that. So what we can do is we can create an automation process that goes in and maybe does something in SharePoint and then sends it to OneDrive or maybe does our emails. Well, again, we now have the ability to launch these directly from our SharePoint lists and library. So this is somewhat like the Flow buttons that you can get on your mobile device. So you can create a button in Flow and use it on your mobile device to initiate a process. For example, one of the buttons I have on my device is the ability to block out an hour's worth of time in my calendar. Push that button, it automatically creates that hour in my calendar. So the ability to launch these automation processes from SharePoint lists and libraries is slowly becoming available to all tenants. Now, another one here is the advanced threat protection is now being rolled out to SharePoint, OneDrive, and Microsoft Teams. So advanced threat protection is typically something we see in Exchange. It, for example, monitors our links. It makes sure that the attachments that we have in our emails are good, that there isn't any malware. Now, that is also being extended into SharePoint, OneDrive, and Microsoft Teams to protect our data that we store in the Microsoft Cloud, which is really handy. So Microsoft's got a pretty good solution when it comes to the advanced threat protection for its email. So now it's extending that into OneDrive and to SharePoint. Now, something
that's
else.
That's a great product, Rob. That's a fantastic product, that advanced threat protection.
It is, certainly is. And it would be nice, I think, if Microsoft did bring some of the features to the E3 rather than just keeping it in the E5 SKU, but you get what you pay for, I suppose. So, now, something else, Mark. Did you see the whiteboard preview?
You stole my thunder. Of course I did. The whiteboard app. Yes, exactly. It's been in preview for quite some time. It lets you ink on images, create mock-ups, and use notes on a virtual whiteboard. Anyone can use the app. However, Rob, if you want to collaborate and use multiple people in a group, what do you have to have?
You have to have somebody who is an Office 365 business user.
Exactly. The new whiteboard app includes collaborative inking, geometry recognition, table conversation, and automatic table standing. How cool is that? It even comes with a free cup of coffee. No, I'm just kidding. It is really designed to let people share ink across multiple devices, and you can work automatically. You can save it in separate boards. It's just like having your own whiteboard in an office virtually. How cool is that?
Yeah, it looks pretty cool. I haven't... I've searched the Windows Store on my machines. It hasn't popped up as being available yet, so I am waiting with bated breath for that to come out to have a play with it, because very good, I think, to do presentations, to do webinars, things like that. So I'm interested to see how it integrates with the Office 365 environment. So keen to obviously get that on my Windows 10 device and checking the store on a regular basis. According to Microsoft, it is rolling out now, should be available the next couple of days. Fingers crossed that we'll be able to report a successful implementation in the next episode. What else on the Azure side have we got, Mark?
Hey, guess what? Here's that word again. Ready? Free. Free ebook. That's right. So on the last podcast, Rob, yes, it was only like a few days ago, we told you about another free ebook called the Azure Virtual Data Center. This week, however, another free ebook is titled The Developer's Guide to Microsoft Azure, Second Edition. The book was written to help you on your journey to the cloud, whether you're just considering making the move or you've already decided and are underway. This ebook was written by developers for developers. It's specifically meant to give you the fundamental knowledge of Azure and what it's all about, what it offers for you and your organization, and how to take advantage of all of it. Jeez, that's going to be a massive book. More info on that in my blog and in the show notes, and also to the Azure Application Architecture Guide. So, can you believe it, Rob? Azure was released nearly about 8 years ago. 8 years ago. Back then, Azure had only like a few services, as you can imagine. Now, it's grown massively and just keeps expanding literally every single day. Cloud computing itself has also evolved to embrace customer demands. For example, the most consumer-facing apps require a much faster velocity of updates than before to differentiate them from competitors. That's the reason why new architecture styles such as microservices are gaining traction today. Container-based and serverless workloads are becoming de facto. We can see all of these new services and industry trends as a great opportunity, but at the same time, they can be a source of confusion, and customers may have a lot of questions. Get that all the time. Rob, you probably get that as well. People asking, how should I do this? For example, which architecture should I choose? Microservices, N tier? How do we decide? There are many storage choices, for example. Which one is the best for me? When should I use serverless architecture? What's the benefit? Are there any limitations? How can I improve scalability as well as resiliency? What's a DevOps culture, and how can I introduce it to my organization? And the list goes on. So to help answer all these questions, the Azure Cat Team Patterns and Practices area published this guide, the Azure Application Architecture Guide. It's there online for you to read. Just in time, Rob, for the Christmas break. You'll have plenty of time to lie on the couch while it's quiet and read through this book and let it sink in. The link in my blog and in the show notes.
All right, so should we get into our deep dive area?
Sure.
All right, so we've talked again about things like you know, the Azure side of it. So I thought what we do, I twist Mark's arm and we talk about some Office 365 stuff. He may go quiet in the background or fall asleep, and if you hear a slamming noise, that's him banging his head against the desk. So one of the most common points that you need to look at when it comes to Office 365 is getting your files into SharePoint and OneDrive. Now, this is probably the most common step after getting your emails up into that environment. Now, one of the big challenges with SharePoint Online is it's very, very different from normal files and folders. So we don't have map drives, we access things through a website. So again, there are some, I suppose, best practices and tips and tricks that I can give you, and that Mark can probably share some experiences that he has that can help listeners. So I think the first thing I would suggest is that, like all things, when you do move locations, what's one of the things that we do when we move locations is we go and clean up our data. So we look through the stuff that we actually need to migrate. We throw out stuff and delete stuff we don't need and only move the stuff that we need to the cloud. Would you agree with that, Mark?
Well, you would. Lots of other people would. In fact, I see sense in it. But would I? I'm lazy. I wouldn't even do that step. I just like jump to the end game and jump to move into the cloud. I'm one of those kids in a candy store like, cloud, give it to me, give it to me. I don't have to wait and just do the preparation to begin with. I'll just want to get there and take
everything with me. Yeah, I agree, but what's the problem when you want to move everything to the cloud? All of Mark's data moved to the cloud is going to... What's the price you're going to pay for that?
I know, but you know what? I think storage is one of the cheapest parts of the whole aspect.
Correct, but don't forget that you've still got to get it up there, and a lot of people don't have the gigabit speed internet that you enjoy generally. So don't forget that everything that you want to take up into Office 365 or into the cloud in general has got to get up there somehow. That's typically going to be a copy process. You can obviously ship some information to Microsoft data centers, and they do provide that facility if you have lots and lots of data. There's also
import, the import-export service.
Well, there's also the Azure box as well, so there's lots of options to do that. So, but remember, anything
or
you can get
you
up
can,
there.
You can sit outside an Apple store if you've got a a Surface with a large battery life, because normally Apple stores have free Wi-Fi, and they got very, very fast uploads. That's cool. Why you see when you're walking in a shopping center, all these people parked outside and sitting outside of the couches outside of the Apple store using their computers, because it's like free Wi-Fi. Yay, and it's fast.
Well, you know what they say about free. There's no such thing in life as free anything. And if it's free, then you are the product. So just be aware of that. But basically, once you get your data up there, so the first thing I would suggest is you prune your data, get rid of the stuff you don't want, either archive it on-prem. Now, what would you think is the biggest benefit of moving your data into something like SharePoint Online and OneDrive, Mark? What would you think?
Easy. Easy. If there's a fire, if your business burns down, well, guess what? It's not affected. You can still move on. You can work from wherever. It's mobility. You can work from wherever you want to work from. And the other benefit, too, I think, too, is imagine a filing cabinet. I'm just looking at one right now. Imagine a filing cabinet trying to find such and such. Yeah, good luck with that. Having it with SharePoint, you just type in a couple of words, it'll index it within documents. It's fantastic.
So I think that, again, the two items Mark's highlighted are the big benefits. Obviously, you have your access to your data anywhere, anytime. You've also got version control, which means you can roll back if you do have do make mistakes. And the big benefit, I think, is search. Now, you can search from inside a service like Delve. So, in the top left-hand corner, you can run a search across the information. Now, the information that you view in your search is security trimmed. So, that means that you haven't got access to stuff you haven't got permission. So, if someone goes in there and finds something they shouldn't, it's not Dell's fault or SharePoint search. It's because you haven't got your permissions correctly configured. So, again, make sure you do have your permissions set as you would on-prem. It basically is permission-based when we move to SharePoint. So, again, we get a big benefit of the ability to search not only the document title, but also in the document contents. So all of that is indexed. All of that's available. Now, when you think about it, many businesses use the internet regularly and use search engines to find information they want, but that's outside their business. Not many have an internal search engine, so that's exactly what Delve can provide thanks to the indexing ability of SharePoint. So if we've got a range of data, Mark, let's say that we've got stuff we don't access very regularly, but we do have stuff that we work with every day. When it comes to migrating this stuff across, what do you think, or what would your thoughts be on, what do we migrate first? Do we migrate the older stuff first, or we do the newer stuff first?
Well, what I would do, and this is probably not, I would not take this as gospel, what I would do personally, I would install the brand new, and might I add, it's fantastic, the brand new OneDrive for Business Sync client, and set everything up locally and just let it work its magic in the background and moving stuff up or migrate stuff up to the cloud while you go to bed at night time. And then you wake up in the morning, cross your fingers, hopefully it's all up there, and then you can right click on all of it and say save space on my computer. It'll turn it all to shells and then you'll have so much space on your computer, it's on the cloud. But that's probably a better way to do that than that, Rob.
Well, I think that's a good for a personal solution. So the first thing to move up into the cloud for many businesses is users' data. So, you know, Mark's an employee. He's got a whole range of videos and maybe music files and things he probably shouldn't have on there. He wants to get it up to the cloud, get it off his machine, get some more space on that SSD.
While you're sleeping,
that's right. So again, each user in Office 365 is provisioned with their own OneDrive for Business. How much space do they get, Mark? Do you remember?
Is it a terabyte?
So the starting point for the business SKUs is 1 terabyte. The enterprise plans get unlimited storage space. So if you have an enterprise plan with Office 365, each user gets an unlimited cloud storage in their OneDrive. And as Mark mentioned, if you have the full creators update, you get the new sync client, which basically allows you to synchronize information to the cloud and then basically keep a stub of it, so only a listing of it on your local drive, which removes the need for the space locally. Just pull it down as you need. So that's called files on demand. Certainly recommend that. So yes, all users' data. So what sort of data that's personal data would be on your desktop, in your My Documents, anything that a user uses day-to-day? Anything else we missed there, Mark?
Well, I'll just add, yes, you mentioned full creators update, but also that's version 1709. And also, too, just in case you're wondering, 1709, what does that mean? It means year 17, month of 09, when it was released. It's roughly every 6 months, I think. The one before that was 1703. So 1709 is the version you're looking out for. That's got the sync client. And Rob, anything else, your question? Yeah, well, you know, with this OneDrive for Business sync client, not only does it do OneDrive, it does OneDrive for Business, it does personal OneDrive, plus it does SharePoint document library. So you could have, Rob, your business documents in a SharePoint document library, like that's your virtual filing cabinet. You can have your general everyday stuff, like your photos, whatever else, in your personal OneDrive, which is all synced with this sync client. Remember, too, it has the shell only of that file, so it's not taking up space on your computer, so you can get a very, very small C drive and save a bit of money in that respect. Also, too, you've got your phone as well, which has a OneDrive app, and that, too, syncs and talks to OneDrive. And also, it automatically, this is the best part about it, well, one of the best parts, is it automatically synchronizes your photos, once you take a photo, up to your OneDrive account. And so if you lose your phone, it's like same thing. If your house burns down, well, you've got your data. It's safe in the cloud. And yes, I hope it doesn't burn down, but that's the analogy, is basically it's safe in the cloud and you don't have to worry. So yeah.
And one of the good things about the apps on mobile devices now is it also gives you the ability to take the files offline if you do need. So if for some reason your mobile device is out of coverage area, you can select to take some files offline and basically keep them in a local cache on your mobile device, which can be handy if you need those files in a bad reception area. So we've moved our personal data. We can get our users to do that. We can get that via sync. But obviously, there generally is a very large amount of data which is from the company, so shared data. Now, to move that, to do the migration, we've got a couple of options here. So we can still do the synchronization, but probably not recommended in a large environment with lots and lots of files, because it can take, obviously, a lot of time. The other way to approach it is typically to look at third-party tools. So Microsoft has a SharePoint migration tool that makes available that you can download for free, and you can target the information on-prem and upload it into Office 365, and you can do that with on-prem SharePoint as well. It just takes files at this point in time, and there are a number of third-party tools that perform that. The tool that I would point you to, the preferred option I would suggest, is something called ShareGate. ShareGate works really well. It will do files locally, it will do SharePoint, it will maintain the permissions and allow you to do a number of sophisticated options. So basically what you need to do is probably set up that tool, point it to your local information on your local file shares, and then point the other side of it to the destination being Office 365, push go, and away it goes. Now, the limitation obviously is going to be your bandwidth. That may mean that it may be handy, for example, to take some of that data elsewhere to get it all copied up. And it's obviously always going to take longer than you expect because, again, that's the way it happens with data transfers. But once it is up there, it is going to be available to all the users. Now, you probably don't want to drag and drop your data straight from the way it is into your SharePoint team sites, do you, Mark?
Well, no. It also, somebody said to me like a few years ago too that their suggestion was if you've got an organization with a whole bunch of map network drives and you're in this process at an enterprise level moving everything to the cloud, you basically do it on a team-by-team basis or a department-by-department basis. So, for example, let's pick finance, for example. All right, finance, here's your finance document library. Set it all up on their computer so there's like a little folder on their computer, which is the finance area. And then at that point, at, say, Monday morning, you make the whole entire finance map network drive share read-only. So they can double-click on the documents, they can open them up. However, if they hit save, they won't be able to save it. They have to save it to the new location, which is SharePoint, the document library online. And so it's basically putting the onus back on the user. If they want to save it, they've got to save it in the new location. So that's one of the ways somebody was saying, I thought that's not actually bad, because if you do it in one hit, then people are not going to know where they are, really. Whereas if you put the onus back on the department, because they know their data, they know their files, they'll save it and create folders and so forth wherever they want to put it. Have you heard that before?
So the idea that works well with now is Microsoft Teams. So when you create a Microsoft Team for the finance department, you get a SharePoint site called Finance. So again, the idea then would be, it works very well with that strategy, is that you create a team for finance, you show users how to get to the team app, and then they can copy their data up, drag and drop their data up. Now that will get their files up there, and you can do that a number of different ways. You can move it for them, you can get them to move it, you can do, as Mark suggests, makes the original read only. Again, there's lots of strategies here. It's a matter of working out what is the best option for your environment. But once it's in Teams, then basically the finance department have their files in a SharePoint site. They can then build that out further by adding calendars, contacts, lists, and growing it out there. And they can link that into a main site collection using hubs. So Microsoft Hub is coming out for SharePoint that will allow you to connect all these teams together. So that makes a lot of sense. And I think that's why Microsoft went down that path, is to allow you to create a team which is finance, HR, admin, or maybe New South Wales or state or city. And then people can copy up their data, move them from the file shares. Now, let me throw an Azure question at you, Mark. Let's say, for some reason, that we have a group of files that we want to archive, but we don't want to put them in SharePoint for some reason. Where could we put them in Azure?
Azure Cool Storage.
How would we go about configuring that?
Well, there's a couple of ways. Well, actually, there's a couple of ways. You can either set it up through the portal or set it up through Visual Studio or JSON. You can set it up through PowerShell.
So but what do we mean by, just break it down a bit for us, what do we mean by cool storage and sort of where does it end up?
So cool storage is in the cloud, in Azure, and it's a separate area and it's roughly half the cost of storage as the normal storage accounts that you normally use. And it's used for less frequently accessed data and it stores it up there safely. So if you want to long-term storage, this is your option, cool storage. And if you want to get it there, you can either copy it there over the internet connection, or Azure's got this import-export service. So you use, there's a list of couriers, I think there's a couple now that they've got listed in Australia, and you pick the courier, you have to encrypt the drive, there's step-by-step instructions, and it gets shipped to the Azure data center, and somebody at the other end will grab it and then upload it, and then you go to the portal and you'll see that it's all done, and then you finish the process and then it's added to your cool storage account.
Rightio, but what about Azure SMB file shares? Could we use those?
Of course, we shouldn't forget those. So SMB file shares, of course, SMB3, so it's encrypted by default on the connection. 5 terabytes at your fingertips, just like that. Bang, 5 terabytes. And so, yeah, it's coming up to, I think they're going to increase it to about 100. Did I say terabytes? 5 gigabytes, sorry. That's right, 5 terabytes. And they're going to increase it to 100 terabytes. Very, very soon. It's on their documentation website, so it is public knowledge, but that's happening shortly. But yeah, so SMB3, it's great for storing data, but however, it doesn't have permissions, just be wary of that. It's based on your username and password for each share, which is 5 terabytes at the moment. However, there's nothing stopping you by creating multiple of these file shares. And you can have up to, there's a limit, I think it's roughly about 200 in total per subscription. So you can have these file shares, one for each department, each with a different username and password. You can lock it off that way at the moment. But not individual files have permissions yet.
So what you would need to do is you would need to have an Azure subscription, which would give you credits in your Azure portal. You go into the storage area, you create a storage account. Inside the storage account, one of the options is files. You go in there and create a share, a traditional folder. Now, you can upload files from the portal into that share via the web interface, but the easy way to do it is basically to run a command line, which will map that SMB file share to a drive letter. So you can make Z, for example,
Just use Windows, map network driver if you want, same thing.
Yeah, you can do that. You can do it on Linux as well. And that will give you a Z drive and you can just copy files up and as though it was a network drive. But obviously remember the two things is anything you copy up or pull down from there has to come across your internet link. So again, it may not be as quick as a local file share. And the second thing is you need to just keep an eye on the permissions, but it makes a great location for archiving data. So again, we could move things like photos, we could move things like documents, those sort of things that we don't need to necessarily have in SharePoint, but we do want to be able to get them at some stage maybe. So again, SMB file shares and storage account and cool storage as well make some great options for moving probably lower priority files in there. Now, the other thing I'll say is when we move it into SharePoint, it's not generally a drag and drop. You want to take the opportunity to think about your data, to restructure it, you know, does this make sense? And one of the best practices when it comes to SharePoint is creating a very flat structure. So most file systems I see are very deep, so they have lots and lots of folders and subfolders, which become difficult to navigate. So best practice is to start converting those folders into metadata, additional columns in SharePoint that allow you to filter and view your data much easier. So you want a much flatter structure than a deeper structure when it comes to creating SharePoint. Now, the other thing that I will suggest as a rule of thumb is Robert's Rule of Three. What do you think Robert's Rule of Three is, Mark?
Robert's Rule of Three is no more than three levels deep.
Correct, and it also means also applies to change. So my experience is when you give people one item, two items, up to three items, they can generally manage that. You give them a fourth item, what happens, Mark?
You give them a fourth item and you don't hear from them for the rest of the week because they're super excited and they've got stuff to play with.
Not quite. What happens is when you give people the fourth item, it overloads them, and they don't just drop the fourth item, they drop everything. So you see catastrophic failure. People go, oh, it's all too hard, I'm too difficult. So
that's what I mean. You don't hear from them for a week. They're like, yes, go on.
So they're banging their head on the desk. Now, so my advice is it's a slowly approach. So only three changes at a time. So again, pick three teams, do three levels. Don't try and do it all overnight. Don't try and do it all at once. It's generally too much. So again, don't do OneDrive teams and team sites, anything and something else all on top of it. Again, just keep it simple and look to grow into it. Because again, the whole concept is you can have the world's greatest technology, but if nobody uses it, then it's pretty much useless. So we want to make sure that our users are comfortable, which means some training. We also need some help with adoption. But Robert's Rule of Three would be is don't try and give people too much too quickly. Otherwise, you will generally overload them and get some resistance to this new adoption, no matter how good it is. Because even though Mark talks about the ease of OneDrive, he's worked with it for years, the average user that's never seen it can tend to struggle with it. So we need to make that as easy as possible so they do adopt it. Then they'll see the benefits, they'll see the light, and they'll start moving forward with it. So can you remember the day, Mark, when you struggled with cloud computing or you didn't understand what was going on?
Well, cloud computing is just like a server on the internet somewhere else and somebody else looks after it. But I will actually add, I got a letter in the mail the other day, and check this out, my Big Pond cable connection at home has been updated to unlimited data, which means now, on the subject of cloud computing, if I want to upload stuff to the cloud, I just dump it on my computer, it'll work its magic overnight, while I'm sleeping. The rats and mice come in and do their thing. The mice will keep that wheel
I thought it was turning. The Oompa Loompas at night that actually did the work, not the rats and the mice.
Well, whoever it does, and it sends the cloud up to, data up to the cloud. This morning I'm looking out the window and there's no clouds out there. It's all blue sky, so it might struggle. But anyway,
It's an interesting thing, isn't it? I think we're moving towards the US model, which is basically no limits on basically data.
They just got to make it faster, that's all.
Correct, I agree, 100%.
It's unlimited, but come on, just open it up.
So what about the 5G stuff that we've seen, just to branch off a bit on broadband here?
It's coming in 2019, I think it is, or 2018. They've done tests in Melbourne already with 5G.
It looks pretty impressive, doesn't it?
Oh, it's fantastic. It goes up to what, gigabit speeds for your download?
Correct. Yeah, it's amazing. So, again, you can just plant your phone anywhere and you can get this access, this high-speed access. So, it may be the answer to our problems. But, again, remember that when we're migrating data up, there is a data capacity. It's also a throughput. It's going to take you. And basically, the A in ADSL means asynchronous or asymmetric, which means different downspeed to upspeed, which means the upspeed is generally very, very slow. So, again, the recommendation is even before you start doing any migrations or working in the cloud, you look at a symmetric link. Again, Robert's rule of thumb would be roughly about half a meg per user. All right, sorry, is it half a meg or half a gig that we want? What is it? What's the download speeds again, Mark? Gigabytes or megabytes?
Per month? Half a gig per user per month?
No, data speed.
Right, okay, good data speed for how many people?
How much would you say? What's our speed measured? Let's say we've got 10 people.
Well, probably 30 gigabits per second. Sorry, megabits? What am I talking about? Gigabits.
Exactly. We're all getting confused here. I think...
megabits. 30 gigabits per second, roughly.
Yeah. So, Robert's rule of thumb is basically half a megabit per user. So, that's symmetric. So, if you've got 10 users, you want 5 meg up and down. Again, that will give you a rule of thumb. That will vary, obviously. But when we're moving more and more to the cloud, that'll give you a basis. Now, the key to it is symmetric. So, remember, ADSL means fast downloads, but generally very slow uploads, and that can be frustrating. And that uploads applies to syncs, copying, everything. So make sure that you do have a good data link. Now, another question, I suppose, another fear people have, Mark, is that they say, well, if I move everything to the cloud and then, you know, my internet goes down, then I can't access the information. I mean, what's the response to that?
Sorry, you say that question again, because it had trouble coming through on this side. My internet connection...
Yeah, exactly.
Say that question again.
So the idea here is that let's say that you go to a business and you're talking, they say all the benefits of the cloud, and then they basically say, yes, but what happens if I move all my data to the cloud and then my internet connection goes down, how are my users going to access their data?
Well, easy, because if it is in the cloud, well, then at that point, you can just switch across to your mobile phone. Everyone can just use like Tether there on their phone, or one person.
They can go to Microsoft, or they can go to McDonald's, Starbucks, or as Mark has recommended, park yourself outside your local Apple store.
Exactly,
and then
free
you
Wi-Fi.
Can then work. Yeah, free Wi-Fi. So, I think the thing is we've got to move from this concept of being locked to a geography.
Take a massive extension cord with you too, by the way. It's funny, you'll be sitting there with like a 50-meter extension cord gaffer taped across the floor.
Well, the smart thing to do...
Oh, nothing. It's just my power supply.
The smart thing to do would be rent out the additional power points on your power board to other people to cover the costs of your cabling requirements.
And when the security guard comes, it's like safety in numbers.
So the other thing too maybe is then you hook up to the local fitness centre, so you get all the people turning on the bikes and the rowing machines generating you free electricity, eh? Could we do that?
Hey, that's a good idea.
All right. So I think hopefully this has given you a bit of an idea, just a general rule of thumb when it comes to SharePoint migrations. That's moving our files and folders from our on-prem environment to the cloud. The best approach is to move the user-centric data to their OneDrive. Again, OneDrive is not designed to use with shared files. It's aimed for individual files. We then move the divisions or the groups into a team. So you create a Microsoft team, move their data into that, and then you can build your intranet out further. You can link it with the Microsoft hubs together. So lots of options there. Again, and we would do it over a stage process. We wouldn't generally want to do it overnight. And there are third parties third-party tools that allow you to make this easy. We can ship data to Microsoft, lots of options. Basically, have a plan, and if you can, adhere to Robert's rule of three. Don't try and change too much too quickly, and again, look at making sure that your users are educated on how to use SharePoint.
And so, you know what Mark's rule of three is?
What's that?
It's a Microsoft Cloud, so it's number one, it's Azure. It's always number one in my books. Number two is Office 365. And number three is Azure Active Directory.
Excellent. We left out PowerShell, so that's the one that's bringing up the rear there, obviously. So,
this is talking about the cloud, though.
Oh, I see. All right. Well, the cloud is PowerShell.
PowerShell covers all of it together, exactly. The whole thing.
All right. So, I think, is there anything else you'd like to add to our discussion there, Mark, before we close off and give some people the reminder for them to make a contribution to our upcoming episode?
Yep, just like to thank the good guys at Ingram Micro Cloud for putting this podcast on. If it wasn't for them, we wouldn't be able to be here today. And also to the fabulous folk at Rode Microphones. For them, they've made it possible for you guys to hear us.
And hear us well, and make Mark very happy as the audiophile amongst us. So with that, again, we'll call a close to this episode, but we really would like our listeners to take a moment, go to bit.ly/n2kfeedback. Let us know what you think, what you want to see with the podcast coming in 2018. Again, any funny moments or things that were memorable for you on the podcast, and we'll get to put those in the next episode and do a bit of best of, hopefully. Fingers crossed that all works out. We can get that out before the end of the year. We take this opportunity to thank our loyal listeners for listening every episode, for enjoying and putting up with some of our antics and information. We hope that it has been of value. And how can people get in contact with you and with us in general, Mark?
So I've noticed there's been a pretty big increase of Twitter correspondence since I've started work at a certain large software company. But the best way to get in contact with me is at Mark Keane, which is MarkKean.
Excellent. All right. So again, we can find me on the Twitter at DirectorCIA. The N2 podcast is at N2K podcast on Twitter and on Facebook. For direct emails, you can go feedback@needtoknow.cloud. And as always, as I mentioned, if you can take a moment, we really appreciate you to go to bit.ly/n2kfeedback. Let us know what you think and what you'd like to see going forward. With that, I think we're done, aren't we, Mark?
We are. That's it.
And that's all for this episode of the Need to Know podcast.
You have been listening to the Need to Know podcast from CIA Ops. For training on using technologies like SharePoint Online or Office 365, visit www.ciaopsacademy.com. By purchasing from the selection available, you'll be directly supporting this podcast. To provide feedback on this episode, visit www.ciaops.com/contact. This podcast is voiced and produced by me, Mark Keane.